There you go for all of you Chris-erific fans out there who were hurting this week that he was unable to make the trek out to UBC to do his program. Those first three tracks I played this week were per request of Chris-erific. Vapid, new record, Lake of Tears. Of course, why not? 1983 is a song. Cheap Wig, band out of Montreal. Album's called Agonist, and the song was Not Gonna. And it is truly New Sensei-ish, New Sensei-esque. It's very good. And then that last one was by Ivory Towers here in Vancouver. Album's called Endling, and that was The Dweller on the Threshold. That is the solo project of Quinn Rogers, who used to be in Myths, the synth-pop Vancouver group Myths. So it's very good. Ivory Towers. So there you go. This program is called The Burrow on every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. My name is Andy Resto. Thank you all for listening. This week, the rest of this week, at noon every day, we are broadcasting our Live at Lunch concert series, which is exciting. It's been going on for 5 days now. Exhausting in some ways, but the bands have all delivered. Late Spring played today. Late Spring was great. Certainly great. This Friday, there's a special guest. Shilpa Ray is coming all the way from Brooklyn on a tour, playing Vancouver the night before at Venue this Thursday the 17th. And then Friday afternoon, September 18th, she and her band, who will be joining her, will be coming out here to UBC to play at noon for us. And that will be broadcast live on the air. I was able to get a chance to chat with Shilpa last week over the phone. And that's what I'm going to do for this episode this week. Phone chat with Shilpa Ray when she was in Tucson, Arizona, I believe, if I remember correctly. A chat about nothing and everything, of course. So on the other side of these messages, that's what I'll be jumping into. I'm going to play a song called Requiem in a Key I Don't Know from the 2011 or 12 Shilpa Ray and Her Happy Hookers record, Teenage and Torture, which is one of the most coherent and terrific albums I've heard in the last, I don't know, at least 5 years of my life. Requiem in a Key I Don't Know is the closing track to that. We'll hear that, and then as that finishes, it will jump right into the interview that I did with Shilpa. Hope you all enjoy. This is CITR 101.9 FM. The show is called The Burrow. Stay tuned.
Is under the tents at Vanier Park and going strong to September 26th. Come see a dark and hilarious comedy of errors done steampunk style, or discover a world premiere. Shakespeare's Rebel is filled with romance, political twists, and sword fighting that's up close and thrilling. All Rebel tickets are just $20 for students, and there's a low youth price for all the plays. Go to bardonthebeach.org now for details and to buy tickets.
Mental illness or addiction touched your life? You might be interested in coming out to the Kaleidoscope, UBC's first and only student-created, peer-run mental health support group at the university's Vancouver campus. They offer a stigma-free place for people to share their stories with others going through similar experiences. The Kaleidoscope meets every week on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Center for Student Involvement in Brock Hall.
Learn more at the-kaleidoscope.com.
Thank you. As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
The Borough on CITR 101.9 FM, sitting here across, actually not as far as it could be, not across the country, but down south in the States with Shilpa Ray. How are you doing, Shilpa?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. You're in Tucson, Arizona right now, the southwest United States.
Yeah.
And how is that?
It's great. I had a massive Mexican meal, and now I just want to take a nap.
Perfect. Yeah, a siesta, yes. I grew up originally in Las Vegas, so that's the area I'm familiar with, the desert landscape.
Oh, you're from Las Vegas?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like living there?
Short answer, no. but the desert landscape, I guess, is something I understand. And maybe I don't realize how much it's a part of me. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't like the city at all when I was there, but we had to take this detour, and I saw the Valley of Fire.
Okay.
Did you ever see that? That place is rad. Yeah. The nature is really cool, but the showbiz stuff isn't so,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't like it. I'm not into gambling. A lot of people are into gambling. I'm not into it.
I'd imagine a bit different from Brooklyn is where you're originally coming from, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you grew up in Brooklyn?
No, I grew up in Jersey.
Okay.
So I moved out to New York about 15 years ago.
Is there a weird dynamic there between Brooklynites and New Jersey folk? It's hard to get a grip of the exact culture over there. It seems to be interlocked in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is, because it's like all part of the same region. Mm-hmm. So some of the stuff is like similar. I mean, people from Jersey have softer accents, but it's kind of the same stuff, you know?
Right, right.
But at the same time, it's weird. Like, I've noticed, like, there was a Jersey hatred in New York for a long time, but because there's so many transplants now, it's kind of stupid to hate people from Jersey.
So do you even care about this question, like Yankees or Mets? Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah, of course it does. Mets,
okay.
My dad, I have to.
Alrighty. Well, this year's going all right.
I know the Yankees are the golden children of New York, but my dad's a Mets fan, so...
All right, so this tour is in support partly of the new record, last year's Savage. Yes, and before we get into that, though, I wanted to ask about your feelings about Bertolt Brecht. I see you have a cover of Pirate Jenny, one of his songs from the Three Penny Opera, and just wanted to ask about where that came from and if it's a Brecht thing, if it is a content thing with the song, how that came about.
You know, I have always listened to a German cabaret or that style of music, but never have been like such a fanatic to base any of my or thinking about. Like, I never thought that I would base anything off of it. So it never occurred to me to do a cover. I was actually approached to do it by Hal Wilner, who put together this compilation of sea shanties and thought Pirate Jenny would be a good song for me to do. The reason why I would never naturally cover Pirate Jenny is because there's too many lyrics to it, and I can't memorize. I don't know how much stuff. I just don't have the capability. I'm kind of lazy that way. So it was interesting when he gave that to me, and I was like, oh, man, I, like, printed out the lyrics. I was like, well, this is a lot. Because you get into it, and it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I mean, they're amazing storytellers. I mean, even just learning what they were doing, the music itself, it's just based off the lyrics. It's not the other way around.
Right.
So how they played it is part of the story instead of it being the other way, which is how most musicians tackle music as music first and lyrics secondary. And this is like the opposite of that, which I thought was very cool.
I make up the beds for all of you. and I take the penny tips and I thank the clientele. You see me dressed in tatters in this tatty old hotel, and you don't know who you're talking to. You don't know who you're talking to. But one fine evening there'll be screams in the harbour, and they'll ask, what can all that screaming be? And they'll see me smiling as I rinse out my glasses, and they'll say, how she can smile beats me. And a ship with black sails and 50 cannon ties up at the quay. Then they'll say, go and see to the bedrooms, my child, and a penny tip they'll put in my hand. And I'll put it in my pocket and I'll pull the sheets tight, but not one of you will sleep in these sheets tonight. And you still have no idea who I am. You still have no idea who I am. But one fine evening there'll be explosions in the harbour, and they'll ask, what kind of noise is that? And they'll see me standing at the window, and they'll say, what's she got to smile at? And that ship with black sails and 50 cannon will lay the town flat. Then, gentlemen, you'll all wipe the smiles off your faces, for the walls will fall in a minute, and the town will be flattened into the dust. Just one tatty old hotel will be spared as it must. And they'll ask, what special person lives in it? And they'll ask, what special person lives in it? And all through the night there'll be shrieks from the hotel, and they'll ask, why should that hotel be spared? But when they see me walk out in the morning, they'll say, oh, she was living there. And that ship with black sails and 50 cannon runs flags up the mast. Then 100 men towards noon will come ashore, and they'll march by the shadowy water and quickly drag everyone into the streets, clap them in irons and lay them at my feet. And they'll ask me, which one shall we slaughter? And they'll ask me, which one shall we slaughter? And the harbour will be silent on that noonday when they ask me, which one shall it be? And you'll hear me softly say, all of them. And with each head that rolls, I'll shout, hooray! And that ship with black sails and 50 cannon will vanish with me.
And that was during time, or on the song itself. It's with Warren Ellis, yes, and Nick Cave, is that?
And Nick Cave, yes. Yeah,
yeah, and you did a tour with them, yes.
Yeah, I did a couple of tours with them. They're great. I did a short one with Branderman, and that's how we met. Mm-hmm. Or really got to know each other.
Yeah.
And then I did backing vocals for their spring tour. So for Skyway, and then ended up opening the shows in Europe for them on the same same tour. Yeah.
It seems on the surface a bit of it's an interesting pair. Like you both have the same, I guess, presence in a sense. But Nick Cave, I think so much about, he's such a symbol of, in a lot of ways, like masculine virility in the way he comes across.
So funny.
And then it's almost the opposite. And when you come on, and did you feel that way when the tour was going on? Was there a noted
You know, a lot of people thought they needed a female to balance out all that testosterone. It depends. I mean, I have my moments of being very aggressive on stage. Mm-hmm. That changed for me in the last couple of years when I just really felt like singing instead of screaming at the top of my lungs constantly. But I don't know. Like, I don't predetermine anything, really. And I don't think he does either, to be honest with you. Like, I've never... I don't know. Even though he's wild on stage, it's not like he practices in front of a mirror.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It never comes off that way, at least to me. I mean, I never get that impression from him. But I don't know what to think about before I hit a stage. My head actually goes kind of blank. And sometimes I'll get kind of crazy, and sometimes I keep it very mellow. But it's mostly what I feel from the audience, you know?
Yeah.
I'll just respond to that. So there's no predetermined, like, showmanship on my part in terms of what I'm going to do on stage.
All right.
You know, it also depends on how many drinks I've had before I hit it, too.
Okay. And you mentioned you shift of focus in a way, not focused on screaming at the top of your lungs, but rather singing. On the new album, the one that came out before this is Teenage and Torture. Which is labeled as Jill Perret and her Happy Hookers. Is there a band turnover? Is it many of the same musicians on the new album, but now it's a Jill Perret?
It's just I changed my lineup completely because I wanted a different sound, and I was competing against a lot of big amps. it was fun doing that project, you know. But it gets kind of crazy working with people who are working on the side. Because I always come in with my material fleshed out. It's not like I need a collaborator, per se, you know? So I'll come in, and I'll want to do stuff. And sometimes people just get tired of listening to me. You know what I mean? And I guess to keep it fresh, I was sort of like, I want to change everything. And so I did it. And at first, I guess a couple of people probably got a little weirded out by that. But at the end of the day, it's like I come in with knowing what the deal is, and I make sure other people know what the deal is, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm very prone to changing bandmates depending on what I feel like doing or what I want. And it's not like this torturous thing, you know. But being in bands is really hard.
Yeah.
I don't know how the Beatles remained the Beatles for even 10 years. I mean, I know they had it out for each other towards the end of it. It's not easy, like, making a work of art with four people and expecting it to be so equal all the time.
Right.
It's impossible.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something I was going to get into a bit later, but it's apt here. You seem to take on, like, a persona on this album, like a leading figure, kind of. It's very old school in a way. I don't think you see it as much in rock and roll to see these rock stars now, but you have this baboon mask on and all the imagery, and it seems to be embracing taking the lead of this. And some of the videos, it's like a political figure. Is that something that you've thought about and wanted to portray?
I've always been that way. I think in the past, when I was younger, I would take more of a back seat when somebody showed me a little more opposition towards it, you know? Mm-hmm. I remember, like, whenever I would give interviews and stuff and I'd want to, like, remark in some form of my beliefs or something, and I would get a little bit of, you know, grumblings from people that I've worked with in the past or, you know, that didn't want to be associated with what I believed in, you know, because they didn't want to be represented by it. So I used to get a little, like, slack for that. But I've always been that way. Like, I've always had opinions. It doesn't mean I should be a politician. I'm never going to run for president. I want to play music. I don't want to do any of that stuff. But it does affect what I write. It's how I see stuff. It's how I look at the world. I've always been a very over-analytical person. I'm one of those people that you might not want to be friends with all the time, you know? So it's, you know, I can't change that. I've always kind of stuck out like that when I was, since I was a kid. So it comes out now because I'm older and I don't care. I don't really, don't give a shit about what anyone says about me anymore. But I mean, back in the day, I was very conscious, or like I felt like I had to kind of accommodate people.
All right. Could you touch upon the cover of Teenage and Torture? Maybe where that came from, or if there's an artist behind it. It's one. I think it's a great cover.
Yeah, I use a lot of the same people for album artwork, and that's my friend Jason, and he's like this incredible illustrator, and he's based out of Cleveland, Ohio. And we were just like shooting the shit on the phone one day, and he was one of the people. Speaking of the whole rock star persona thing, he was kind of giving me the like the older brother lecture of like, you need to come out of your shell more and be in the front. Like, you just don't seem to want to do that. And so he made that cover. It was like, this is how I see you, and you need to start seeing yourself more this way. And see, I thought that was really amazing.
It's funny. I look at the cover, and it is like the male figure that is impaling. But I do...
But it's the masculinity of me, you know? That's the craziest part.
Yeah, and that's I see it as, like, the album is so aggressive in that way and almost violent. And so I think it's very, very apt. And it's, like, just stringing up the politicians.
It's also a throwback to a lot of those hardcore zines, like a lot of the illustrations that you'd see in the early 90s and stuff, which I love. So you definitely have that background. That's really cool.
How does one become proficient in the accordion nowadays? Are there...
Well, I wouldn't know because I don't play the accordion. I play the harmonium.
The harmonium. Well, there you go. So then for people like me, how do you educate people on the differences and the subtleties of the harmonium?
Well, it's like an accordion in the sense that you use bellows, but it's run on reeds. I believe an accordion is a little bit different, and it's got the other chords on the other end. Your left hand plays the chords on the for the melodies that you play with your right hand, and that's the basis of an accordion. Harmonium is drone stops and stuff in the front. Everything's in the front.
Okay.
And you have to hit the keys, and the bellows dictate how long you sustain something for. It's a very rhythmic instrument.
How did you?
And there's different ways of playing it. My parents maybe do it.
Okay.
Yeah, my background is Indian, and they made me learn classical Indian music as a kid, and that's what you play to accompany your voice. But and it's not supposed to be a very elaborate sort of thing, you know, when you play it against your voice. It's just for the voice. But you can also do more complex stuff with it if you just play it on its own. Yeah, I don't know. I hated it when I was young. I thought it was really dorky, and I really wanted to play guitar. But my parents were like, no way. And so I ended up adapting the harmonium and playing some songs that I like. You know, like how kids used to take their guitars and play the songs that they wanted to learn how to play. And I really loved Velvet Underground when I was young, and I learned some Velvet Underground songs. It lends itself very well. It works.
Yeah, I think Nico started, plays. You know? I think Nico plays harmonium on some of her records,
right? She does.
Yeah.
She plays a European style, which has the foot pedals on the bottom.
Okay.
And yeah, her stuff is crazy. She watched her play. She has a very different style of doing stuff, but she's amazing. She's highly underrated as a musician. I really dig your stuff a lot.
Yeah. Would you say those are kind of your primary influences? Are there any surprising influences or guilty pleasures that people want to be aware that you listen to and admire?
Oh, my God. Huge Janet Jackson fan.
All right. That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you roll out of your mom's stomach and start listening to, like, you know, hip stuff.
Underground,
remixes. I mean, you know. No, we used to listen to stuff on the radio. But I was in dance school in Jersey, And the uniform was pink lipstick, blue eyeliner, and, like, 6-inch bangs. And, like, yeah, I used to do the, you know, the Running Man and stuff. And I wanted to be a fly girl on Living Color. Discovered rock and roll and, you know.
Goes from there. It infects the youth. Yeah. Rock and roll infects the youth. So, getting to the new record more in depth, I guess. How has it gone so far, at least with the promotion? Has it been good reception with the record? Any major issues that you've had?
No, you know, it's crazy. I was told that it was going to tank because it wasn't as heavy as the last one. And it didn't, which is great. No, people have been responding really well to stuff, and I don't know. I guess music is music. It's like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm constantly put in under pressure to act like a man or something, because I've been told a multitude of times that I don't sing like a woman. I don't write like one too, as if it's a compliment or something.
I think it's
very backhanded. It's super backhanded to say that to someone.
Yeah, that's some of the weird things that, like, what I was trying to ask about before. It's the kind of role that you're taking seems to typically be this role that's like a Nick Cave or a David Bowie or something. But that's why I thought it was odd that he's on tour, because I feel like you're the opposite kind of aggression coming from the other side.
Even Harvey is like a big presence on stage too, and she doesn't identify with any gender from what I've read, but she has a very feminine presence in my eyes, and it's just weird. It's weird that, like, to me, when people say when you write like a man, as if that's like a compliment
Something,
it just blows my mind. It's like, you know what? I am female. You know, I have female organs, and I have, you know, I go through all the biological forms of being a woman. Why does that mean I'm programmed to write poorly? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me at all.
And it's interesting too, listening, if you were to listen to Teenage and Torture and then last year's Savage back to back, it's not all that much of a change, because I feel like Requiem in a Key I Don't Know, the final track of Teenage and Torture, is the most closely related to last year's Savage. It seems to be the tone of the rest of the record. So, wanted to ask about a couple things. First, the song Sanitary iPad. So I have a sneaky suspicion it's not just about iPads. However, to talk about the iPad reference, how do you feel about timely cultural references, in that sense, in lyrics, that when someone listens to it in 10 to 20 years, it's very dated in a sense? Do you like to use those kind of things, or do you think maybe in a while, when everyone sees the iPad as something that's irrelevant, it won't be as poignant?
Well, you know, it's the art of writing in a way. I mean, it's not exactly, like you said, it's not exactly about the iPad, but that would be saying, like, songs written about televisions and stuff isn't relevant. But they are, and there's lots of punk rock songs about TV. They always have TV as an image, because that's what, you know, we're like, old television shows as an imagery or you know, part of the storyline. It kind of gives you a sense. I think dating things also gives you an atmosphere of where the writer was coming from at the time. I mean, that's just, you know, like a lot of New York City bands give modern or from the 70s, at least, when they write about stuff, you can see a New York from, like, the 70s. Like, that stuff doesn't exist anymore, you know? But that doesn't mean that the song isn't worth something, because it has a very universal sense to it. But the song Sanitary iPad is about the how fast we replace stuff, how fast we call things old, you know? It's kind of like how we change, you know, our partners and things like that. Yeah. So I kind of likened it to, you know.
Another lyric I'd like to clear up. The end of Moksha, once you like what you're like, it can go three ways, and I can't tell if it's once you like what you're like, once you're like what you're like, or once you're like what you like. And is there an answer to that, or is it better to leave it ambiguous?
I think you answered your own question there.
All right, so it's meant to spin around in circles.
Yep.
And is moksha, what is that, where does that title come from?
Moksha is moksha. The Hindu concept of, it's what you go through. Oh my God, I'm gonna get this wrong. Because there's samsara and then there's moksha, and it's like the passage from the material life to the afterlife. Right. And it's what it's signifying. Nirvana is like the place where you go. So it's like kind of related to Hinduism and Buddhism. I was in Nepal at the time I wrote this song. And I had gone, this is before the earthquake happened and stuff. It was like a couple years ago. And I went to this temple, and it's exclusively for Hindus. And I'm still Hindu. So I went to see this temple. And the guide at the temple was showing me about the cremation sites and how much you have to pay to get burned at the proper place, the closest to God. And all I kept thinking about was outside the temple, how much poverty there was and how bad I felt that there's like people that would probably give their generational amounts of money to have their loved ones like cremated closer to God, and how wrong that is. Because it's just wrong. Because you don't know if there's even an afterlife. It's like this could be complete horseshit that they're showing you. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And they do that, you know, like Hinduism, along with every other, you know, organized religion, is a very monetary-based religion when in practice. You know, they want your donations. They want you to put something down, and how much you give, you know, correlates to how much return you get. And I think it's a load of shit. Mm. I just didn't like it. It's like everywhere you step, you have to pay somebody something to get, you know, blessed.
Right.
I can't deal with it.
Yeah, it's been centuries worth of dealing about this. Protestantism comes out of that, just angry about paying for repentance and stuff.
Well, you know, like, getting buried in a cemetery costs so much money.
Yeah.
And it's just nuts, because the person's dead.
Yeah. It takes up space. It's
But I'm your native girl with my tail between my bleeding ass, and I'm off to the gates of heaven. I've been faking my drunk stupor and my absence from your real world. I'm just better than frustrating bitches who make believe them misunderstood. Cause I've been here before and nothing's new anymore. Pass me to sainthood. Discount pass me to sainthood. I wanna storm through the
tuned in to CITR 11.9 FM in Vancouver. This program is called The Burrow. My name's Andy Resto. On each Monday, 3 to 4 p.m. If you have been tuned in this week, I've been playing an interview that I did with Shilpa Ray from Brooklyn, who's going to be here in Vancouver this Thursday at Venue, playing alongside Man Man. And then also we'll be playing as part of our Live at Lunch series here at CITR the following afternoon, Friday, September 18th, and we'll broadcast that live from noon to 1. So, other side of these quick messages, gonna go ahead and conclude the interview with Shilpa Ray, and we'll be just about ready to wrap up the episode. And what you just heard was Moksha off of Shilpa's most recent album, last year's Savage. So stay tuned. This is The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM. Other side will be the conclusion of an interview, a chat with Shilpa Ray.
September 17 to 20th, Rifflandia Festival will transform Victoria, BC, featuring a diverse lineup of artists across numerous stages and pop-up venues, all within walking distance in the city's beautiful and historic downtown core.
Dancing naked around a fire, leaving trouble behind, swimming in the water.
This year's acts include Chromeo, Julian Casablancas, Plus the Voids, Chiesa, Arkellis, and more. Visit Rifflandia.com for full details. Sometimes
you get tied down. Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Another lyric that I, it's very simple and it's like 2 seconds worth in the song, but for some reason it's so well fitting to me. How did I get so happy? And it's just a question. So putting it to you, how did you get so happy?
Yeah. Did you ever get like freaked out when everything's fine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I like the lyric. It comes out of nowhere and there's a lot of, in the album and music in general, there's all this negativity, and that's what a lot of inspiration comes from. But then all of a sudden that comes in, because sometimes you just sit there and realize, why am I okay with all this? Why am I happy right now?
Yeah, that's really freaky. I don't know. I mean, I've definitely met tons of artists that, like, refuse to fall in love because they feel like it will mess up their art because they'll be too happy. Tons of people say that kind of stuff to me all the time, you know? And it's wild. It's crazy. But that, it's part of that syndrome, you know? It's just, I think once you're, even when people like freak out about the money aspects of making art, I think that the real sign of an artist is someone who's so addicted to making art that they just don't even consider any of that stuff anymore, you know?
Right.
That's like when you're a hardcore artist that happens. But I always found that very interesting, you know, like that whole like the sacrificing of everything to in order to keep your head in some space, you can keep producing something.
The song Nocturnal Emissions had a video that you made for it. Do you maybe want to touch on the ideas behind the video, and then also if that's something you're interested in pursuing, if you enjoy doing that kind of thing? I mean, it's acting in a certain sense, but making videos and putting visuals to your music.
Oh, yeah. I love that kind of stuff. I love writing the material more than anything else. I say I'm more of a behind-the-camera person, but, you know, when you bit your stuff and they're like, you need to go in the front. You need to be in the front, so I just get in the front. But no, I'm a terrible actress. I couldn't do that in a million years. I don't like being photographed. I don't like looking at footage of myself. I like the process of it's fun, you know, the actual action of it.
Right.
That feels kind of cool when you're in the middle of doing something. But I'm not much into reviewing what I do or, like, actively pursuing parts and plays or I'm never going to be a musician slash actor. But I could see myself, like, writing scripts and stuff eventually. Like, I like that stuff a lot. And a lot of the how I write and what I write about, even if it's lyrically done, which is a whole different format than writing scripts, it's always, like, comes around as a film in my head. So that is something I'd eventually want to get into. I couldn't see myself being a big-time director or anything like that because you need a lot of training. Well, who knows? Like, I would love to, like, write stuff for people.
Yeah, it seems like, and particularly Teenage and Torture seems to be very coherent, and a lot of it's a lot of minor stories that are all relevant. And is that mainly how you structure things when you're writing? You're seeing it as a story or as a situation?
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm not like an abstract writer, which a lot of musicians are, and that comes off really beautifully too. You know, when you just combine, like, you know, very conceptual stuff, I'm much more concrete. I just see shit and see things. I should stop saying the word shit. I see things and I interpret them and I just put them on the page. But I definitely see, like, characters and, you know, some of it's a bigger part of me and some of it's not. Like, Teenage and Torture, when I wrote that, wasn't an autobiographical account. It was more observational. And Savage is definitely more autobiographical. That's a lot to do with, like, things I've actually experienced or how I feel as opposed to what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So it's nice to, like, switch back and forth doing that. But, yeah, I mean, there isn't much to dissect in my writing. I don't see it that way at all.
Is there a centerpiece that you see to the new record?
To the one that just came out?
Yeah, last year, Savage.
Probably Nocturnal.
Any new projects on the horizon, or is it primarily focused on the new band now and how things are going?
I'm writing a new record right now, and I'm hoping to get back into the studio maybe late next year. I would love to tour more. I like to tour. I like to be in a different city every day and live out of a suitcase and eat crappy gas station food. It's like my favorite. So I'm not even being sarcastic, what kind I am, but I like that stuff. I don't know. There's lots of stuff I want to do. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
So you're going to be in Vancouver next week on the 17th, and then playing.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And then playing an afternoon show here. Which is here on campus, middle of the day. People, confused students, wandering around. So I would hope that you crank up the shock value a little bit.
And maybe
get people turning their heads. And it's during lunch, so how do you feel about that? Do you want people, would you be okay with people sitting around eating salads or pizzas as you're playing?
Oh, yeah, it's totally cool. People listen to stuff in different ways. I mean, I played sets where I played by myself and everyone's talking, and like I remember hearing like what the last week's episode of the Kardashians was like while I was playing at the same time, and they got like the down low, and you know, Kim and Khloe or whoever.
Yeah, Kim Kanye.
But it doesn't bother me as much anymore as it used to. Like, you get used to it, because then all of a sudden, like, that same person will come up to you and they'll buy all your merch. It's like nuts, you know. So they were listening the entire time,
right. But
needed to, you know, distract themselves somehow. So, I don't know, people are weird. They just do their thing, and you just got to accept it.
Alrighty. So about coming to the end here, would you have any song requests if I were to wrap up a radio show with this interview on it?
Oh, of other bands?
Yeah, anything you like.
All right, yeah. Have you ever heard of Slap Happy?
Slap Happy? No.
Slap Happy?
All right, I'll look that up. Get Slap Happy. You have a song?
Yeah, Blue Flower is a good one. That's something Mazzy Star also covered. And both versions are amazing. But my bandmate, John DeLorme, who plays pedal steel, turned me on to this band, and I can't get enough of it. And that song is incredible, and sung by Dagmar Krauss, and she's like such an incredible singer. I just love it so much.
All right, great. Do you have anything else to say? Any announcements you need to make? Get out to the wide listenership.
Oh my god. Oh man. I've been traveling in like a 15 passenger van for like a week straight, and I have nothing profound going on in my head. Except that I can't wait to eat ramen in Vancouver. That's what I'm looking forward to. It's going to be great.
That'll be good.
I like playing it up there. I like your city a lot. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Great.
I hope it's sunny when I get there.
I don't know. It's starting to turn nowadays. I don't know. Any weird tour stories thus far that you could say on the radio?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know how much I have to censor myself. I've got a lot of crazy stuff, but I never know what's appropriate and what's not. I think last night we did a 13-hour drive because we all got like kind of crazy, and I think we ran over a skunk.
Ooh, okay.
Half the band thinks that we did, and half the band says we didn't. Like, I have a really weak sense of smell. I can't smell anything. But two of my bandmates are like, I'm pretty sure we ran over a skunk last night. And one's a vegetarian, and he feels really guilty about it.
Oh, boy. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to
be another victim along those roads.
That's the only G-rated story I have.
Yeah,
I can't
okay.
really disclose anymore. You're going to talk about Pepe Le Pew and the troubles of Pepe Le Pew.
All right. Great. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. And
yeah.
Good luck with the rest of the tour, and I will catch up with you, I guess, here next
All
week.
All right.
Take
awesome. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah. All righty. So that was my interview with Shilpa Ray, formerly of the band Shilpa Ray and her Happy Hookers, now on her own with a different backup group from Brooklyn, going to be here in Vancouver this Thursday evening, and then we'll be playing live at lunch. Still, I wonder if she knows what she's getting into. Anyhow, that's this Friday at noon, and we'll be broadcasting it. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show here with Blue Flower by Slap Happy, as per Shilpa's request. Thank you all for listening. This has been The Burrow on CITR 101.9 FM. Jade is here and ready for A Little Bit of Soul coming on next. So stay tuned and groove to Blue Flower by Slap Happy.
Would you look at that? It's already 4 o'clock.